The Virtual Boy is returning, headaches and all. Plus, Nintendo has been granted some curious patents that might affect more of gaming than we know. Tonight is September 14th, 2025, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is Edwin Akeriper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwell.
That's right, it's a Hogwash Hype Train going on in chat. Thank you for that, Pod Culture, and thank you for everybody. Lots of people in the Hype Train over in chat. Hello, everybody, and welcome to, I guess, a Hype Edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us here live on the Voice of Geeks Network, thank you so much for being here. We do try to tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. That's where you can join us, interact with the show directly, and even contribute to the Hype Train. I will talk about everybody that's contributing to the Hype Train with additional support than just being here at the end of the show. We're not going to do it now, but I do see you. I do appreciate you and all that stuff, which is why it's great that I'm going to say I'm not going to be here next week. So there will not be a Bobby Blackwell show next week. There will still be an Orange Lounge Radio, and believe it or not, Pod Culture, this is not to do what you think I usually leave on Sunday nights and why you would drink. No, there's a music festival in town and Weird Al's playing at the music festival. And so we got tickets to the music festival. And we're like, yeah, it's Sunday, but it's a big music festival here in the Atlanta area. It's a 3-day one. We only got Sunday passes because that's when Weird Al's playing. And so we're going to be going to see Weird Al. I have not canceled the show every time he's come into town because he usually plays here on a Sunday for whatever reason. But this time I am. So, I'm going to be down. If you're in the Atlanta area, it's Shaky Knees. It's down at Piedmont Park. I will be there, to see other bands too. I like music. And I even like some of the bands that are also playing on Sunday night. But that's the reason we're going. So no show next week here for me. Orange Sound Radio will still be here at the normal time. Let's get into the news that's happening this week. So this is obviously a podcast. So you can join our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord. Talk to me about the news that you want me to talk about. But this is going to be the first, because I used to be, everybody was like, you're a VR podcaster. And I stopped talking a lot about VR, even though I still like it. I still have a Valve Index here. Funny story, I actually had a MetaQuest 3 for a couple months. I don't know if I ever actually mentioned it on the show, but I had it through work. And then I quit that job and had to give it back. But I had a MetaQuest 3. I even bought the Pinball FX VR for it. So I have games on my Meta account, but I no longer have a headset to play them on. But I actually had a MetaQuest 3, but I didn't talk about it because it was a work thing, and I had it for a work project that actually went over really well, and then I quit that job. So I don't have the MetaQuest 3 now, but I have had it, and But I still love VR, and VR is making a triumphant comeback here on consoles. We have new VR coming for consoles. That's right. Nintendo has announced that the Virtual Boy is making a comeback. This is the Virtual Boy is being added to the virtual consoles for Nintendo Switch and Switch 2. And you are going to be able to spend $100 of your hard-earned money to get a plastic shell that has the appropriate lenses to be able to play them in stereoscopic 3D. And you actually do need this to play the Virtual Boy games. Now, there is a cardboard version for $25 that you can also get. But the new versions all work with every Switch. So the Switch and Switch 2. In fact, I will probably tell you the console that will work best for this is probably the OLED Switch 1 because it can actually do real blacks. So the question that I haven't gotten answered from this, and by the way, 14 games are going to be released over time, which is like most of the Virtual Boy library. It's coming February 17th, 2026. You have to have the expansion pack for it. But the question that I have is that what about those of us who got the Labo VR kit? Because that also has VR lenses, and it looks a lot like the cardboard model that you see that we saw in the demo there, and it has VR lenses, and I have mine sitting right back here, and yeah, it doesn't work with anything but the OG Switch, but I still have my OG Switch. It's literally right here because it's what I've been streaming with, because that's what I've got the dock. So when I've been playing UFO 50 on my personal Twitch channel, it's been on the OG Switch that I bought on launch day. So I wonder, because this does work with the original Switch, you don't need a Switch 2 for any of this. Do I need to buy anything, or can I just use the Labo kit that I built years ago? Tireclaw says, so the Switch 2 can do the stereoscopic 3D? No. That is why you need a cardboard or a piece of plastic that has the lenses. Because all it does, it's the same thing that the Labo VR kit did, is that it actually just put on the screen, which is really actually how every VR headset really works, is that there is a screen, a regular screen that looks like a mobile phone screen, really. And it's got it's a warped projection, left eye, right eye, but on the same screen. And then the lenses in the kit unwarp it and show it to your eyes. That's all it does. And anything can do it. That's why Google Cardboard was a thing where you could use your phone and get stereoscopic 3D. It's all in the lenses, which is what is in the cardboard that is more than just cardboard. The cardboard VR kit actually has these lenses that unwarp the screen, and it is right next to your screen. So that's how it works. That's actually how every VR headset actually works under the hood. Even the Mighty Quest 3 is like that, and I believe even the Apple Vision Pro, it's pretty much the same thing, and just lenses have changed over time. Different type of lenses have come in to get rid of, like, the halo effect or the pancake effect or whatever you don't like. Tackloss says, Switch 2 does 120 Hz refresh rate. That is a must for VR. It's not actually a must. It just needs to be above 60 or at 60, really, because really that's – it's and really also – the refresh rate is if you move your head. But you can get away with 75 hertz, and it doesn't hurt. But Virtual Boy, it doesn't change your perspective. The reason you got headaches with the Virtual Boy is more because of the redness. But in Virtual Boy, if you remember, it sits on your table. You're not actually moving around looking around. And the reason that you need the high refresh rate is so there is less lag time for what the screen's showing from when you are physically moving your head. Because what is motion sickness? What is motion sickness? And I'm talking not just VR sickness, but car sickness, air sickness, boats, you know, seasickness. What is that? What it is. And this is true. This is science. Are you ready for a quick science lesson? This is true. When you get sick from motion sickness, which is seasickness, car sickness, VR sickness, whatever, it is your brain saying, you know what? The information I'm getting from my eyes disagree with the information that I'm getting from the fluid in my ears. I must be poisoned. I must expel the poison. That's all it is. So with the Virtual Boy games, though, there was no head movement. You were basically looking into something, and it gave you stereoscopic 3D. But the 60 hertz or the 120 hertz, which is required for VR, is required for things where you're moving your head. So your eyes and your ears are more in line with each other, so your brain doesn't think that you are poisoned and doesn't try to expel the poison. But Virtual Boy, you're not moving your head. It's a fixed thing. So I wonder if those of us who still have our Labo VR kits and still have a Switch that works in them, I don't know if the OLED one works with them or not. I'm not sure. But I wonder if those would work, because I'm sure there's some kind of some way it could tell, I believe. Because I haven't used that Labo kit, but like there were other games that had it. Like I think Smash Brothers had Labo connectivity. And yeah, it'll be interesting for that. But really, I think the Switch OLED version is going to be the one that works the best if you do get the Virtual Boy hardware, either the $100 plastic or the $25 cardboard, because it's going to actually have very accurate blacks, where even the Switch 2 doesn't have accurate blacks because it's not an OLED screen. And Esther and Matt does say the Virtual Boy $100 dock can have googly eyes, though. Well, my cardboard has googly eyes over there. I know it's kind of dark because of the way that I have my lights here, but there's googly eyes on the cardboard as well. I did put googly eyes on my Labo cardboard. Don't you want to give it a gift to googly sight? I mean, I'm probably going to get that $100 thing. I am going to be that person. I have already been told on Blue Sky, don't do it. And I am not going to listen to that person. I am not. I will get it. And I know that there's, you know, other things like, why do this when the 3DS has a homebrew Virtual Boy emulator that works great? Well, my 3DS isn't jailbroken yet, so I don't have that. And or I already have a Virtual Boy. Well, guess what? I have tried to get a working Virtual Boy, and I have failed. You may have succeeded, congratulations, but I failed. So I would like to have something that is a Virtual Boy. I would have loved to have had an original one, and some of those cartridges are $300, $400 for the games. But I don't necessarily need the actual one, and the I can actually put the plastic $100 piece of plastic here on the shelf with everything else, and everybody be like, "Why'd you buy that?" And I'm like, "So you would ask that question." And Pop Culture says 3DS is super easy to install custom firmware on. I am positive you are correct. Do I care enough to do it? No. I understand I have the right to hack all my devices. I just don't. I don't want to. And sometimes that's okay. So welcome back to the Virtual Boy. There were a lot of other things in the Nintendo Direct. Somebody's like, it's the most important Nintendo Direct ever. And I'm like, but the Switch 2 Nintendo Direct was earlier this year. But no mention of Silk Song. So I don't know how the people who are waiting for Silk Song news in the Nintendo Direct are going to handle it, because they didn't mention Silk Song once in the Direct. But there's Donkey Kong DLC. There's a couple other things in the Direct that I remember. I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. Tamagotchi Life still next year. I kind of wanted that one. The Virtual Boy, it's coming out in February. E3 Veil says Silk Song was released before the Direct happened. That's the joke. That's the joke. It was never mentioned on a Direct. It was shown in a sizzle reel in the past, but I was making a joke about how the Directs are all, if you read the comments, which never read the comments, you read the comments, they're all like, where's Silk Song? And like this Direct didn't have Silk Song either. An Animal Crossing style Pokemon game. We're going to get into some Pokemon a little bit here. And SJR Man says they brought back the Mario Galaxy 2 pack at a higher price this time, because nostalgia is a hell of a drug. And yeah, so and the Cozy Game has some Minecraft elements, and everything's trying to be Minecraft. And we're getting a Mario Galaxy movie, and Chris Pratt is playing every character. It was kind of interesting how they showed just, you know, Chris Pratt as everybody, as we all thought. All right, let's talk about, we're going to get to some more Nintendo stuff in a second, but I wanted to talk about this. This is a story that I've just really kind of delved into just a little bit. And it's kind of interesting because there's a couple of aspects of this. And I believe the statute of limitations is out on this, because I've also talked about this before, but I am literally guilty of the exact same thing this person is. And so the police have not raided me yet. And I'm going to actually get into that. And I unfortunately don't think I've got an actual good picture of it to talk about it. But I will get into that in a second. I didn't go down and take a picture. It's down in my basement right now. But Time Extension reports that earlier this year, there was a fundraising drive by the nonprofit preservation group, the Video Game Preservation Museum, to save a collection of undumped Game Boy Advance, DS, DSi, and 3DS games that were at risk of falling into the hands of private collectors. The Hall of Games included prototypes of titles such as Sonic Chronicles, The Dark Brotherhood, Sonic Generations, Mario and Sonic at the Winter Olympic Games, Phantasy Star Zero, Alien Infestation, Shinobi, and an unreleased Nintendo DS version of Rhythm Thief and The Emperor's Treasure. But in July, things took a turn for the worse when it was reported that the seller of this collection was raided by British police and the hall was seized. So Sega was actually involved with this process. So the seller, who is going to be remaining anonymous, obtained the collection as part of his business. He says, quote, "I have been running an online resale business for many years, specializing in used electronics, whether fully working or sold for spares and repairs. My stock typically comes from office clearances, house clearances, recycling centers, and scrap yards." Unquote. And during a visit to one of his regular scrapyard contacts, a removals worker arrived with a van load of items that had reportedly come from Sega's office clearance because it recently relocated its UK office from Brentford to the nearby Chiswick Business Park. Alongside sofas, fridges, and other office furniture, it would appear that a large number of development consoles were present. He says, quote, "I agreed a deal to purchase the consoles with the intention of reselling them online, exactly as I have with countless other items over the past decades," unquote. He paid around 10,000 euro or 10,000 pounds. That's a pound sign, not a euro sign. 10,000 pounds for the items. The seller claims that around a month before the raid, a private investigator, later revealed to be acting on behalf of Sega, approached him pretending to be a prospective buyer, and on July 14th, the seller's home was raided, and he was arrested. This took place around 3 months after the purchase of the items. So, what essentially is happening here is that Sega closed offices, and they liquidated, and they scrapped a bunch of stuff. And part of the stuff that they scrapped were development kits that they were using to release, to create Sega games. So, and it's all Nintendo development kits. So dev kits to do Game Boy Advance, DS, DSi, and a lot of the prototypes that were part of it. And the reality is, the legal reality of this is that those dev kits are actually property of Nintendo. Sega does not own those development kits. So Sega should have returned those development kits to Nintendo. They did not. They contacted a local business who knows nothing about video games and was like, this is just, you know, this is all junk. They left it here. Some employee at Sega didn't empty whatever closet these old things were. They moved out all the current dev kits, but they left behind the legacy dev kits. And so it wound up in the hands of this person who literally goes around buying office furniture and selling it online for cheap and electronics and things like that. And Sega realized they screwed up. And so they sent the police. And they claimed that the seller was doing money laundering when he was questioned by police and he was asking the right questions. And they kind of stammered. And because they wanted him to sign back the ownership of those devices to Sega. And he's like, but if Sega never owned them in the first place, why am I signing this? And that's where they kind of are right now. But this police raided all the dev kits and the prototypes, which is a collect. There's a lot of preservationists that want to get these prototypes. This is history. This is gaming history. And this is still being played out in courts. It's still being played out. You know, lawyers are kind of present for this. But Sega was directly involved with this raid, and there was even a Sega employee, I believe, in the house. Now, they did just take the consoles. They didn't take any of the cables. They didn't take any of the accessories. They just took the consoles and the cartridges and the prototypes. Yeah, as Sheridan Matt says, someone at Sega messed up during the move and didn't bring the dev kits to the new office. And the idea that the dev kits are owned by Nintendo, that is not a new phenomenon. That's always been the case. You're always supposed to return things like that to Nintendo. You are merely leasing them or renting them, so they're not supposed to go away. And as Sheridan Matt even says, you're supposed to send dev kits back after a certain amount of time. They had PS3 dev kits in the office at a previous job that they had to return. Actually, a Sony person employee came in person to take them back. So, how I'm, tying myself into this, because that's what I do, right? I've got such a big head, is that I have done the same thing to somebody that should not have sold me something. So, in my basement, in my arcade, I actually have a retail PlayStation 2 kiosk that even has an iToy camera, and it has two DualShock 2 controllers, which unfortunately one of the moving companies broke the arm, so I have to, fix that. But it's got a PS2 in it, and it has, this little, LCD 4x3 screen. And it even had the iToy demo disc. It even had the booklets that were along the side. And I've had this for forever. And how did I get it? Well, way back when, there was a retail store, especially in my area, and I think there were other places around the country, called Media Play. And for those of you who don't know what Media Play is, I completely understand it closed down 20-something years ago. But Media Play had music, movies, books, and everything else, which was literally called Hardlines, was the name of the department internally. And I worked for the Hardlines department, but that was your video games. It was also your paraphernalia. They had some 420 paraphernalia going on there, and I had to justify that to parents and stuff. But it was really the video game section and T-shirts and other things. So I used to work there. That was one of my jobs. Blockbuster Video and Media Play were my two retail jobs when I was in college, and neither exist anymore. So I was the kiss of death, obviously. But when they went out of business, I went in to see, what are they selling? And they were selling the shelving and all the stuff that you're liquidating when you're closing down a business and you don't need it anymore. And they also had these kiosks. And I was like, how much? And I think it was $350 for this full standing kiosk with the game in it, the iToy, all of the paraphernalia that came with it. And I'm like, sold. I'll take it. So I took it. I gave them $300 cash or whatever and got it and all that stuff. And so I never thought a second thought of it, but I happened to be in the electronics boutique at the mall nearby, and the Sony rep was there. And I mentioned I bought the one from Media Play. And she looked at me and she's like, so that was you. Because Media Play was supposed to give it back. Because it's not theirs. Now, even though they knew that I had it, they didn't send the cops after me. They didn't do anything. They wrote it off. But they used it. They wanted to use it for parts because, the TV it's a really interesting LCD TV. This is a very old picture. This is actually a picture after I got it. This is actually an apartment that this is a 20-year-old picture. That's why it's really tiny. So that's sitting down and there's a picture for the people on the podcast. It's an old PlayStation 2 kiosk. I'm actually running Guitar Hero on it because I was able to stand up and play Guitar Hero. It's a PlayStation 2 kiosk. It's actually showcasing iToy Kinetic and iToy Play. That was what the demo disc was. And so there's an iToy at the top. And And Esther and Matt says, I've seen those kiosks for sale, but they're just the shell, no TV, no console, etc. I imagine that's by design. Yeah, so I got the whole thing. Now, that PS2 doesn't really, it does read discs. I actually did turn it on. I actually turned it on when I moved it in the arcade. I turned it on, and it does actually read that demo disc. The laser kind of needs some love. I was trying to sell it. I tried to sell it to somebody, and they weren't interested. Because I'm like, I really don't need this anymore. I've had it in my house for 20 years. I very rarely turn it on. It's a conversation piece, but now it's just taking up time, taking up room. And the actual arms that are on here, there's like little arms here down at the bottom that hold the controllers. They've actually were broken by a moving company when I moved, actually, to this house. They didn't pack it correctly, so they snapped. The controllers still work. But the shell, the housing snapped. And Terrell asked, "How did you take it home?" We had a truck, and I just laid it down in the truck, and I drove it in, and then I put it on a dolly, and I wheeled it in. I didn't take anything apart. There's nothing to take apart. And honestly, if I had taken it apart, it probably would still be working right now. But no, it was a freestanding thing. So, don't arrest me, Sega, even though that's not Sega, that's Sony. But, this happens. What I'm kind of trying to say is that this type of thing happens. There are people that have Dreamcast kiosks from retail that have the full thing, and they're not supposed to have that either. So this kind of thing happens. And, getting the police involved is a little bit much. That being said, it is it is British law. It is not American law, so I'm not an expert on anybody's law. But I do wish that the prototypes would be preserved. And I understand that these corporations, a lot of the corporations, they don't want the public having access to their sordid history. They don't want the public having access to their prototypes. But I think that's what I was kind of hoping to get. Because the seller was willing to sell those prototypes to an archival thing, but he's just in for the money. The person who's selling this is not a gamer. He sells electronics, and he just sees this as another pile of electronics. And this is a good haul for him because he paid 10,000 euros or 10,000 pounds, and he probably could sell it for a lot more than that. And now he's out all that money, which is why he does have a vested interest in fighting this in court over in England. Fifth Dream, who said this in chat, but we're not going to say, I don't even know Fifth Dream's real name. The Kinect he has, Microsoft sent it when he worked for Xbox phone support. It was supposed to go back to them, but they never asked. And that happens too. I actually have an old MacBook Pro that my job two jobs ago, I was like, hey, so can I send this back? They're like, it's a 2014 MacBook Pro. And it's 2024. No, we don't want it. I'm like, okay, so now I have a 2014 MacBook Pro I can't really do much with because it hasn't been it. You can't update it past any OS from 2021. Tiger Claw says, having these dev kits would have allowed someone to design games for it, so imagine new games created by fans made specifically for these consoles. You act like people aren't making homebrew DS and Game Boy Advance games. Like, you don't need a dev kit to make the games. That's why we have EverDrives, and there are EverDrives that have... You can turn any console, especially of that era, into a dev kit with just an EverDrive that has, like, a USB port, and then you can just send it over USB from your computer. You don't actually need dev kits for that anymore. And, in fact, Game Boy Advance is actually even taught sometimes in college, because the Game Boy Advance, I think, was the first game console that used C instead of assembler, or at least the first handheld console. I believe it's the Game Boy Advance. And so they would actually use it for, you know, teaching. I think Georgia Tech here used it to teach some programming fundamentals in computer science, was making things on the Game Boy Advance, because it was very easy to develop for Game Boy Advance without having a dev kit. And Dark Tetsuya says, both the Nintendo PlayStation, the Super Nintendo CD, and the PlayStation Zero and Sega Pluto have units out in the wild, but there's so very few because most people follow the terms of their contract. And HDI Andrew says, it was Ian Bogost. Yes, he used to do that at Georgia Tech. Ian Bogost, who is now Kansas? University of Kansas? He's somewhere out in the Midwest at a university there. I actually had a former coworker who took his course and actually shared with us the Game Boy Advance ROM that they had made in their class at Georgia Tech. It's one of the few things I can say good about Georgia Tech. Other than that, they cheat, lie, and steal, go dogs, Rocky Flop, 4441, pod culture can drink. All right, Let's talk about the next thing, because this is going to have some far-reaching implications in the game industry, I believe. At least for people that want to make this type of game. So we're going to get back into Pokemon. And this is a failure of the U.S. Patent Office, because they shouldn't have allowed this to happen, but they did. Kotaku reports that since we're coming up to the first anniversary of Nintendo's lawsuit against Pocket Pair, the developer of the edgy Pokemon with Guns survival game Pal World, which is not really Pokemon with Guns, but whatever, on the grounds of patent infringement. So the Pokemon company went after them not for the appearance of the creatures, but for the in-game mechanics, such as aiming and firing an item at a character in a field to trigger combat, capturing creatures in the wild, and riding on creatures you can swap between easily in an open world. These are extremely broad and non-specific, and if Nintendo felt like it, the company could easily go after plenty of other games beyond Pal World on these grounds. Nintendo and the Pokemon Company aren't done patenting vague concepts in the Pokemon series, though. They have just patented more mechanics in a development that could affect the entire monster-taming genre. So GamesFray, a site dedicated to reporting on patent law and other legal issues in the video game industry, reports that Nintendo have received a U.S. patent for the mechanic of summoning a character and letting it fight another. Let that sink in. Summoning a character and letting it fight another. So what this means is, this is the actual patent text. A non-transitory computer-readable storage medium having stored therein a game program and the game program causing a process, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, okay, this is in a video game. They're going to execute performing control of moving a player character on a field in a virtual space based on movement operation input. Okay, so number two there is you are moving around in a 3D world. Performing control of causing a sub-character to appear on a field based on a first operation input, which basically means if you hit the Y button and a Pokeball comes out, boom, you have caused a sub-character to come on the field. When an enemy character is placed at a location when the sub-character is caused to appear, controlling a battle between the sub-character and the enemy character by a first mode in which the battle proceeds based on an operation input. So this is kind of explaining... You are giving directions. Now, it's vague enough that it doesn't necessarily have to be turn-based, although obviously they are kind of going into turn-based lexicon here, but this could broadly be applied to, oh, you're also controlling in a real time. When the enemy character is not placed at the location where the sub-character is caused to appear, starting automatic control of automatically moving the sub-character that has appeared, and performing control of moving the sub-character in a predetermined direction on the field based on a second operation input, and when the enemy character is placed at a location of a designation, controlling a battle between the sub-character and the enemy character by a second mode in which the battle automatically proceeds. That's legalese. This idea is essentially they are patenting the concept of in a 3D virtual world. You are moving around as a person. You press a button to have to bring another character who then fights enemies with your input. So there was a question here that, you know, what about Final Fantasy? And yes, this basically does apply to possibly Final Fantasy. And also they talked about mounts. I haven't finished Fantasy Life Eye. I got distracted by shinies, but there's a mount that you can get that you can then ride. So, but this article here says that they doubt they're going to go after Bandai Namco or Square Enix, but like this is monopolizing an entire genre. Because like I believe what Digimon is kind of the same thing, and that's not a Nintendo thing. But there are actually IP lawyers, intellectual property lawyers, that have said that this should not have been approved. And they don't believe that the USPTO, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, really took a good look at this to see if this is something that should be patented. In fact, most patents, usually they ask for like qualifying questions and stuff. They send it back. And apparently for one of these, they didn't. They just... They just approved it. And there are similar patents in Japan, which is one thing that they look at. But I was reading another article that I'm not going to quote. It was in PC Gamer, I believe, on PCGamer.com. And it was like this whole interview with an IP lawyer. It was pretty long. And it was basically like they did not do their due diligence. And probably, who knows, there might not be as many people in the U.S. Patent Office right now than there used to be. And also, they have, in the past 9 months, not heard as many appeals. They have decided not to listen to too many appeals in the past 9 months. So it is actually harder to challenge these patents than it was just 10 months ago. Questbuster Mueller, the lawyer behind Games Fray, noted the patent is so broad it's likely it can be challenged in court by the big fish, but the problem is that this can have a chilling effect on smaller devs without deep pockets to face a potential challenge. And there are a lot of indie devs that have made Pokemon-like games. There was one that, and I'm blanking on the name right now, and I think if HDI Andrew's still in chat, he will know. It's got a lot of cursing in it, but it looks like an old Game Boy game, and it's been it's from, I think, indie developers in Canada, but they've come down to Atlanta to show it, and it actually is Pokemon with guns. It literally is Pokemon with guns, but it's not Pal World, and it's not ripping off the Pokemon character art. They've made their own stuff, but indie games like that would run afoul of this patent. And that's kind of the landmine that you run into as an indie developer, is that a lot of game companies do patent things like that seem like, oh, I came up with this. Oh, well, so did they, but they patented it first. HDI Andrew says, I remember it, but not the name. Yeah, I don't remember it off the top of my head. I've got like the demo on Steam. It's out now, but it's a Game Boy. Looks like a Game Boy game with the green color scheme and everything, and it's got cursing in it, so it's definitely not safe for kids. But Questbuster also says there's Cassette Beast. Bonds 006 says Monster Rancher. There are plenty of creature taming and creature fighting games out there that would fall under this patent. So this is why I don't like a lot of the video game patents out there. Because we're losing out on a lot of innovative takes on a genre when it gets patented. Konami held a patent for rhythm games that expired. It's gone now because they only last 20 years. But they actually held the patent, and I believe, and I'm sure that Dark Tetsuyer, one of our more rhythm game connoisseurs, is going to correct me on this. I believe that the patent was, when you're playing a rhythm game, having a different sound play based on what note you hit in the game. So like having like a note change, like a pitch change, which something like the Beatmania 2DX would do, is like if you hit the wrong button, if you hit the wrong key, it played a different note. And it was like a key sound patent or something like that. And so that's why, like, when Guitar Hero came out, it either played the actual note or it played like a completely different sound, because Konami had the patent on the key sound. But I also believe that Guitar Hero did actually license Konami's patent, because I believe Konami's patent's on the Guitar Hero stuff. But a lot of other places, like, you couldn't do that key sound patent, key sound thing. E3VL says the minigame loading string, that was Namco. So that was the idea of playing another game during a loading screen. That was a patent that Namco had, so they could put Rally X in the Ridge Racer load screen. And they patented that process, which meant nobody else could put any type of interactive load screen in anything else, in their games. And it finally expired right around the time we stopped having load screens, because now we have SSDs and load times are almost instantaneous right now. So now we don't need the patent anymore, but it was around for 20 years. Questbuster also brings up the Nemesis system in Shadow of Mordor, which was awesome. If an enemy escaped you, it could return stronger and rank up. Warner Brothers shuttered the studio behind it, and now no one can use it. And it was supposed to be used in the Wonder Woman game. We actually covered that story when it happened, because the Nemesis patent, Warner Brothers just keeping it behind lock and keys, and nobody can do that, even the developers of Shadow of Mordor, who have gone on to create a new game and a new studio, they can't use that system. Because Warner Brothers is not really interested in selling the patent or even licensing it because it's just too much work. That would require them to pay someone to do it. And Dark Tatsuya says, my quote-unquote favorite was Tim Langdell owning Edge. That's why it was Soul Blade in the U.S. and not Soul Edge on PlayStation. I believe the person who... I believe Bethesda claims they own Scrolls. Because I remember the dude who made Minecraft, who's no longer part of Minecraft, who now has a million-dollar mansion somewhere. He made a game called Scrolls after Minecraft. And Bethesda's like, you can't call your game Scrolls. But that's not patent. That's trademark. So just know that. That having a name of something is a trademark. Patents, patent technology or, you know, usage. And there are a lot of terrible patents. Like, theoretically, podcasting was patented. And we're all in violation of this one dude who decided they were going to patent the idea of podcasting. And unfortunately, he sued the big guys. And the big guys had lawyers and got the patent thrown out. But that was a while ago. We're going to take a quick music break because that's not patented. We're going to take a quick music break. And then we'll take calls or talk about what you're playing this week or what you're looking forward to from the Nintendo Direct. Talk more to OLR. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Bobby Blackwell, I choose you.
Is that bumper patented now? Can I not do that bumper anymore? Is that how that works? I don't know. Welcome back. That was actually the voice actor for Ash Ketchum. Thank you so much for that. All right, so you don't have to be a voice actor send me a bumper. All I got to do is send me an MP3 with just your voice or a video of just your voice. I will choose what DMCA violation to put behind it so the British police come raiding me for my collectibles or whatever. I don't know. So thank you so much for doing that. But you can send me a bumper if you want for coming back to the Bobby Blackwell Show. So, all right. Somebody was asking because I played actually the Overclock remix I played. Was from Pokemon Pinball. That was the game that I had used. During the music break, I play a remix from Overclock Remix because they're stream safe and we're not going to get DMCA'd for it. There's a lot of great remixes out there on Spotify now, and those I would actually get copyright strikes if I played those because they release them on like actual CDs and thing or not CDs, but like they sell them now. On Bandcamp and things like that, so can't use that. But I played those, and somebody and DJ Roma S asked, "Did anybody play Revenge of the Gator for Game Boy? That was a fun pinball game. It's actually my favorite Game Boy game, and I that was one of the first ones I had when I first got the Game Boy, and that's the one I played a whole lot. And the interesting thing is, what I learned is because I was very sad when I got. Because I've got a custom-built arcade cabinet in my basement, and it has a lot of other things that aren't arcade games. And I was very sad because Revenge of the Gator wasn't there. And then I learned, I'm like, wait a minute, what is it in Japanese? Because it's alphabetical order, and it wasn't there in the R's. And the Japanese title is something that's a different place in the alphabet. And I'm like, oh, there it is. There it is. It's there. So, Dark Sea says, I think it's on Switch Online. I believe it is. I believe a lot of the pinball games are there on Switch Online. Because I know, like, NES Pinball is there. And I think there's a Sonic Spinball is a pinball game, technically, and that's in the Genesis one. So there weren't that many pinball games put out around that time, but a lot of the first-party ones, they were. And I believe Revenge of the Gator is in the Game Boy one. So... All right, coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VogNetwork, is Orange Lounge Radio, three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than we do, and we like to check in with them because, you know what, I want to know if there's anything else from the big Nintendo Direct that Rob cares about. I obviously only care about the Virtual Boy. That's it. I am just Virtual Boy. That's VR. That's it. Nothing else. But that. But we would like to check in with them to see if there was anything else, because a lot of other stuff. Like, we even saw some new Metroid. There was a lot of other stuff in that direct. A lot of people were like, "It's the best one this year," and I'm like, "Really, Sacramento? Are you there?"
I am here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well. So, the Nintendo Direct was this week. I only care about the Virtual Boy. but you even got to see Metroid with a motorcycle.
Yeah, a more Tron-related property I'm excited about than the movie that's mm-hmm. coming out soon at this point. So, yeah. Yeah, the motorbike looked fun in Metroid Prime.
Everything needs a motorbike now. Mm-hmm, everything. Because mm-hmm. we got a motorbike in Final Fantasy now, and, you know.
Right. Well, we had one in 7, but yes.
So, well, what else in the Direct? I guess what I'll first ask with is, because I know that you played some Donkey Kong Bonanza, and they actually released a demo of Donkey Kong Bonanza. So now I've played Donkey Kong Bonanza because I haven't bought it yet.
How far did the demo go?
So the demo goes. So I'm assuming there's a time jump in the demo. So it starts off. Which would be the beginning of the game. You're down in the cavern, and then the banana. You know, you're learning about all that. You've got all the monkeys around you, and then the banana gets taken away.
Yes.
Then it time jumps to you have Pauline, and you are on like this floating island.
Okay. And yeah, it's a bit of a time jump.
And then the minute you get, they're like, oh, you know, you can use this to go down to the sub levels. That's when the demo ends.
Okay, I gotcha.
So yeah, it's a demo. And by the way, if you're wondering, it's about 6 gigs. If you're wondering how big the demo is. So that's there. So I played it a little bit, but they've announced DLC. Did you continue on with Bonanza after streaming it? Did you play it anymore?
I did play more, but I haven't finished it. So that's kind of where I'm at. I got distracted with all the traveling that happened last month and all that. But no, I have not finished it, sadly. But I'm curious about the DLC. The DLC looks interesting. You know, palette swapping that gold to emerald. But no, it's a clip, which just makes you think, oh, then we'll have Ruby Rush and Sapphire Rush. We'll have ourselves a trilogy. But no, I mean, it's, you know, obviously DLC is where a lot of games end up going. And as long as it's adding a rich experience to a rich base experience and not something that's mm-hmm. being, you know, tacked on, you know, or an additional thing that is necessary for the base experience to be complete, you know, it is what it is. Nintendo has a pretty good track record with DLC. And the reason why I lay all that down is that, you know, you probably saw a lot of the talk online about how it's already been announced that there's DLC for Pokemon Legends Z to A when the game hasn't even released yet. And that's getting some type of pushback from the community. But I'm also, you know, and I get it. The optics aren't great. But at the same time, did you ever doubt that that was going to be the case? Did you ever doubt that there was going to be DLC? Because there's always DLC for Pokemon games.
And I mean, and here's where I come from that, because obviously I have the software development background, not in games. But we keep complaining, oh, they released the game and then they lay off the team. Well, the idea of the DLC is they can announce it before, but they don't start working on it until the main game has gone gold. So it keeps them employed, which is what we theoretically all want. We don't want the developers laid off because they don't have a next project. They have the next project. It's the DLC. They've already done the design work on it.
Yeah.
And so they're going to work on it after the game came out, and which theoretically is a good thing, but the optics are bad because they're like, well, why not just wait? Like, and then we just always be waiting. And then at the, you know, okay, maybe we wait until the DLC's finished and it's all in the base game. They don't make any more money because we aren't going to pay extra money for that. It's just going to be what should be in the game. And, you know, and then they lay off all the developers. And they're like, why is the game industry so bad? And there are reasons the game industry is so bad. But this is a case where they're like, we want to keep them employed. So we're going to continue working on this game after it's released and have this DLC. And we already know what that's going to be. We have our roadmap. You know, were people really upset when Avengers Infinity War came out knowing Endgame was going to happen later?
Yeah. I think the outrage is a little bit misplaced. I mean, I'm not going to tell somebody what their opinion ought to be, but I feel like, you know, it's It's like a TV show getting renewed for a second season when the first season isn't finished yet. I think akin to your analogy there. It just shows to me that Nintendo is really investing in this game, because I don't think the first Legends game had DLC that I recall. And it kind of would have benefited from some. Somebody's going to correct me in chat, but I really don't think it did. The other Pokemon games on Switch have had it, but not that one. You know, because that DLC has taken the place of, because Pokemon games always had DLC, it's just that it would be repackaged into Pokemon Yellow or the you know, that third game that always came out in the series, but that's been replaced now with DLC. So which kind of is a good thing, I think, because you end up spending, you know, you don't have to buy the game twice. So yeah, anyway, I think the outrage is a little bit misplaced, especially because Nintendo has a good track record. And I think the only DLC that Nintendo has really ever botched is Splatoon. But as even was pointed out to me in Blue Sky by Splatoon fan Mike Deft, that, you know, it's more the way they split it up and where they kind of split up that DLC. Yeah. They made some bad calls and made one of the DLC packs basically kind of useless. But, you know, all that aside, so maybe that was their screw up, was they made one DLC thing too, and maybe they shouldn't have. But that's really the only place Nintendo's really faltered with DLC. They're usually pretty strong with it. So I'm not too worried about the DLC in this game.
Yeah.
But I think all the other stuff I liked was also Pokemon related. I think the game that caught my attention the most was, and I really hate this name, but Pokopia, the Minecraft-esque kind of Pokemon game that has Ditto as kind of your crafty. Actually, to me, it looks way more like Dragon Quest Builders than anything else. It looks exactly like Dragon Quest Builders with Pokemon. But that game really caught my attention as far as the new games go. I don't get into Fire Emblem. Yeah. I know that game has its cult fans.
Yep.
Love that game. And I love that for you, that you're getting another Fire Emblem game. It does seem like a solid series for fans of that genre. I just don't really follow that genre similarly to how I don't follow a lot of sports releases that come out. But, you know, it's exciting to see some more characters that'll be in a future Smash title.
I will say that there was a demo for Bonanza that went up. There was also a demo, just in case people are interested in this, in Persona 3 Reload. So if you haven't tried the remake of Persona 3, that is there on the Switch. I will say that it does run fine, but it is basically a 30 frames per second is what I've been seeing. And I first played Reload on my Xbox, where it's 60 frames a second. And a lot of the Atlas does with the Persona series especially is like the really nice transitions for their menus. It's very stylized, and it's kind of jarring seeing it in 30 frames a second. But the game works fine. Like, it's not dipping in frame rate. They just made that intentional decision. And after being so used to seeing the 60 frames per second, I probably wouldn't play it on the Switch, but that's because I have options. But if you don't have options, if all you have is Switch 2, Persona 3 Reload, it's going to be great.
You have to make the call with what works for you. I've been very open on this show that I don't do a lot of portable gaming. Like the occasional flight is maybe where I will do, but that ends up being where I watch movies, to be honest. Yeah. I don't watch a lot of movies either. You know, I just don't do port. So I love my Switch 2, but I play it in docked mode. But that being said, if a game releases on Switch 2 and PlayStation, I am always going to opt to get it on PlayStation or even Xbox, because it's just going to perform better. Like, that's just the fact of the hardware and everything that goes inside it. But obviously the Nintendo first party titles and a lot of the releases they get are so strong, it justifies the reason for me to own a Switch 2 in the first place. So
I get the games that I think I'm going to play on the, like, play when I am traveling on the Switch. That's why I got, like, Theatrhythm, Final Bar Line. I got that on Switch 2. I've gotten all the Digital Eclipse stuff, which, by the way, October 30th is the Mortal Kombat collection. That's the official date.
It's coming. So, right before Halloween.
Because a lot of the Digital Eclipse ones, they are more retro and more, you know, pick up and play for a little bit. And that's more what I would be doing when I'm traveling. So I try to get those there. But yeah, the other games, I'm like, yeah, if I want to play it in, you know, even though I can play my Switch 2 on the nice screen, I tend to not as much. And I will say, because I do have, and for people who don't know, I actually have like a big projector screen. I've got a home theater, very fortunate life. I'm not trying to brag on that, but I played Bonanza on it, and it's very disorienting playing Bonanza on a screen that big.
Interesting. I could see that though.
Like, I bet
Black
it is.
Black Wolf Manor is a very good place to play games. That's my favorite place I've played No Man's Sky.
But I tried to play Bonanza there, and because I was playing it where I normally play games down there, and I bet I would do better. I'm going to try the demo again, just handheld. Okay. But I think the size of the screen and all of the destruction and the camera movements and the camera, it's kind of the way they kind of do the dark to the light when you've got the camera panning around is kind of jarring on a screen that huge. Yeah. And I found that even like with rhythm games, even I did get DJ Max on the PlayStation 4, and I tried to play it once down there, and I'm like, nope. And I go back up to the TV because it's just too big. There's too much room where I have to, like, actually look around.
But one of these days, we'll have an Atari off.
Yeah.
in the basement of Black Wolf Manor. Yes.
Yeah, I haven't plugged my Atari 2600 Plus up down there yet. But
between Atari 50 and all the other ways Atari releases classics, you don't need it.
You don't need it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
Let's see. Some big releases this week include Borderlands 4, which has had a bit of an interesting start. So we'll talk about that. There's a little bit of hype around Acclaim and, that name sort of being resurrected, even though the people that have it now don't really have anything to do with the old company. But it's interesting now we know how they're going to use it. So we'll talk a little bit about that direct as well. And a settlement in the case of the Switch 2 accessory maker who build all the deets a little early, and Nintendo was not happy about it. So we'll talk about all that, some of the things you talked about, and much more coming up on OLR.
All right. I will not be here next week. I'm going to go see Weird Al.
Enjoy the polka. It'll be fun.
So I will see you in 2 weeks, but OLR is coming up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next in 2 weeks, Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, or you can join us on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord. Also, you can find me on social media at BobbyBlackWolf.com on Blue Sky, Bobby Blackwolf on Instagram. I've actually started posting just a little bit more on Instagram because I feel that's probably where I should put some more content up for whatever reason. I don't know why, but at Bobby Blackwolf, and maybe I'll have some photos of me watching Weird Al next week on Instagram. That's where that would be. Anyway, really, the Discord server also is where you can comment on these articles or suggest things to talk about on the show. I actually didn't even talk about everything that was suggested. I apologize for that, but I had to pick and choose. It was nice to have some options. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make this live show work without the help of the chatters who went above and beyond. You being here is really all we ask. But we, those of you who go above and beyond with bits and subscriptions on Twitch, thank you so much. It really does help come tax time for us to just be a great legal entity. So if we do get violate a patent, they go after the business and not me. So thank you, Rob Roberts, resubscribed. Thank with some money. Thank you so much. Pod Culture resubscribed. Thank you. Fifth Dream resubscribed. Gave the Wolfie emote. Thank you so much for that. That started a hype train. SSJ100 Matt contributed to the hype train. I guess the resubscriptions kind of hit at this point. So thank you so much for the hype train, and Esther and Matt for the subscription. Dark Tetsuya resubscribed. Thank you so much. Sean322 resubscribed and cheered 200 bits saying whoop. Pod Culture gave out a community sub, so congratulations to and I'm trying to pull up who got that sub because I've got it here, I believe. Where is it? There it is. Pod Culture, congratulations to Moxie. So enjoy that sub, Moxie. Thank you so much for the gift sub there. SJNRMAT cheered 250 bits. Thank you so much. And that concluded the hype train. Thank you so much. And then Dark Sakura resubscribed. Thank you very, very, very much. All right. Dark Sakura and the rest of Orange Sound Radio is coming up next. I'm going to go ahead the button. I will see you in 2 weeks. I'm going to go enjoy Weird Al down in the hot Piedmont Park area of Atlanta. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
A winner is you.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.